resonates so much with me to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. That's why I think I got that, because
your perception of the questions or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
And that would make sense.
That would totally make sense. Yep. And it makes sense with your childhood,
yes,
too.
Yes, it does.
So the girls have both taken their primal question test.
Failed it.
No. So I failed it.
Yeah. Failed it.
I feel like I failed it too, because it's not at all what I thought.
It's not what you thought. And so maybe what we're going to do is, if this is your first time tuning into Raw, Real, Redeemed, you need to listen to last week's podcast first, because we're talking about the book, The Seven Primal Questions by Mike Foster, where we gave an overview of the book. And then we all have taken the test. You can take a free test at primalquestion.com. And now in this podcast, I'm going to break down every single question. And so the girls are going to agree or disagree with the quiz that they took. I mean, bottom line is you know, there is still some subjection to the to the test taking. And so you're going to, you'll agree or disagree.
The whole answers, it's so hard.
Yeah.
Like, I think in the moment, I'm like,
always.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never.
So just a brief overview from before we go into, we break down each question. Just the basic premise of this book is that every person has a primal question seared into their being, and that this question is the driving force behind their life. Your primal question is not a negative thing. It's only a problem if we're unaware of it. So we're not here to fix the question, but to discover what it is and to understand its influence on us. It's our floor plan for awareness. And so we're going to unpack them. And with each question, we unpack a big idea, a snapshot, a core fear, the imprint, the primal gift, our kryptonite, our primal truth statement, our primal avoidance, other ways to ask the question, our satellite question, and a coaching moment. So wow. It's going to be like a big, small overview of each question.
Can you just copy the...
A big, small overview.
Like an overarching overview, yeah, but
it's
like...
a lot.
Yeah, it is okay. A lot, but it's... So just,
it's so good.
Just sit back and listen. And then...
I'm so anal retentive. I can't. I'm like, I must take notes.
I'm
going to have you...
Yeah, and I'll give you a copy of my notes.
I was okay. I want
yeah,
a copy
I have
of
27
notes.
Pages, guys. Nerd alert. Wow. A++.
Your A++ is showing.
Your A++ is showing, Amy. Okay. So question one, am I safe? He says, trauma is often the originator of this question.
Can anybody guess what my question was?
So Amber's test said that her answer is question one, but she's not quite sure if it really is. But that makes sense that, yeah. And so.
And as I was thinking about it, just so you know, everyone knows that my narrative is, am I wanted? Am I loved? That's my internal narrative. But I think you were kind of speaking to me offline, and what kind of resonated with me was, the reason I felt unwanted and unloved was because I was unsafe.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think if you really get to the core,
yeah.
Of who, what my life is, was,
to the
I
core,
never,
core.
The core,
was,
core.
I was not safe.
That's so good. Okay. I love that. Yeah.
So I do actually agree with it, even though the other two questions are literally
what you say
the
every
name
day.
Of my
yeah.
biography
right.
someday.
So good. Unwanted, unloved, #, am I safe?
Yeah.
Okay. The big idea behind this question: safety is the foundation for a grounded, abundant life. When we feel protected, we thrive. When our safety is in question, our best selves are compromised. Snapshot, big picture overview. At their best, Q1s are relaxed and at peace. They use their gifts to heal and protect others. They have a gift to create places where people feel physically and emotionally safe. Thrown into their scramble, which is the bad thing, right? Where we try to force the answer into a yes if we perceive it as a no or a maybe. They are hypervigilant, living on high alert in a world of worst case scenarios. They attempt to control the future by anticipating and avoiding risks. And you say sometimes before a heavy conversation, you play every possible conversation
yes,
in your brain.
Yes, 100% I do that.
That's so interesting. I love that.
I do that.
The core-
and that has always been, sorry,
no,
just because
no.
it's my question. My entire life, I wanted my house to be the house. And my entire, my kids' entire childhood, and even Thanksgiving that I continue to do, I am the land of misfit toys. Like, I have always had children, people coming into my house. Oh, your college dorm has closed. Come and stay with me. Like, I have always.
That's your superpower.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
I would
good.
Say that.
The core fear of a Q1 is harm. Fear of experiencing pain and or not being able to survive or figure things out.
That's me.
The imprint. So this is how that question imprinted on you. Q1s often grew up in a home that failed to make them feel safe and protected. It may have expressed itself in a subtle way through the neglect of a caretaker who was disengaged. Stronger imprints of this question came through homes where abuse, violence, and addiction were present. Early childhood trauma is a very common theme with this primal question in particular.
Hello. Hi, it's me. I'm the problem. It's me.
It's me.
I'm the problem. Hi.
It's me.
Okay, primal gift. Q1s are the world's guardians who help people feel safe and protected. They are the watchdogs and protectors of the world, which I think is no surprise that much of your life has been spent in as a teacher.
Raising children.
For the littles.
For the little.
Yep. And you've always said it takes a totally messed up person to hurt a kid, to hurt a little kid, a baby.
Oh, yeah. Like, I actually think you should probably be drowned.
Right. So very good. It'd be better for a millstone to be hung around your neck.
For sure.
Kryptonite for a Q1 is negative surprises.
Or feelings. Mine says unpredictable and negative surprise. Oh, for sure.
Okay. So good. That's your kryptonite. Your primal truth statement is, I am safe. Your primal avoidance, tendency to avoid risks and keep people at an emotionally safe distance.
Check in. Check, check, check.
Other ways, sure. Other ways to ask the question, will I be okay? Am I protected? Is life against me? Will I survive? Okay, so your satellite question, the question next to number one is question two, right? So the satellite question for a Q1 would be, you're being called the guardian. It's safety plus security. Q1, so this might be, you might just be straight up Q1, or maybe you're the guardian, where Q1s look toward Q2s, am I secure, to show up their sense of safety. This produces a powerful archetype called the guardian, one who feels called to protect the people of the world.
Wow.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I could see that in me. The thing that keeps coming to me, which is so funny, is that for me, yes, there was abuse in my life, but the lack of love and the lack of being wanted is feeling unsafe to me. Like, I think that's what it's so interesting
to
me.
That's your
root. That's my root. So, like, you know, physical danger and things like that, like, that doesn't nearly scare me enough. Maybe because I just was raised with so much trauma that, like, I don't get.
The other day her shed was on fire and she's like, it's fine.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. I was like, all right, it's go time. It's time to go get the fire extinguisher. And I turned it on and I was Uncle Mike was sitting there watching me. I'm like, all right, it's go time. And I got the boys and we're doing all these things. And like, I was completely calm.
Yeah.
And Kurt actually was like, do you need a drink? Like, do you, I feel like you need to have it. And I was like, no, I got to go to the dentist. Like, it was over because it's manageable. It's also why I think I'm always a wedding planner, because that is like a chaos thing and I can make it.
And you can prevent all the surprises.
I can prevent everything. Mm-hmm. But emotional love and acceptance is my actual deepest insecurity. That's where I feel the most unsafe.
Yeah. And that was what I said
too. Emotional surprises.
And emotional surprises.
Relationship
so for me,
surprises.
Like, I would win.
Primal avoidance, emotionally safe distance.
For sure, like, I would win Survivor. Mm-hmm. I would win Survivor.
Because you could just.
Because I could, I know how to make everyone feel the way they need to feel. Peter said that the first time we watched Survivor. He's like, you could win this thing. Mm-hmm. Emma could win that too. Mm-hmm. Emma would win it. Mm-hmm. But like,
So I'd get kicked off the boat before we even got there.
Yeah,
you would. But you can have my idol.
You would do that.
You all stink.
Yeah. So anyway, I think
tell you what it's like.
For me, my safety fear, like where I feel the most insecure, is if I don't feel I'm loved and wanted, I don't feel safe.
So that will be interesting when we get to that question. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like the security part, like finances, like I don't really give a hoot.
Yeah.
Like I've always been poor. I grew up poor. Like I know how to make beans and toast. Like I don't want to be poor. I don't find joy in it. But
that's not a big fear for you.
It's not. Yeah. But loved and wanted are.
Okay. That'd be cool when we get there.
I know.
Okay.
I'm curious.
Okay. So how he ends, he ends every question with a coaching moment. So for Q1s, the coaching moment is, remind yourself that you are not alone and you have help. The wounded part of you wants to take full control. It will tell you that no one will rescue you, so you must rescue yourself. In the short term, it feels good to have full control, but it leads you to a life of hypervigilance and exhaustion. Ask friends for help. Use your voice. Express your needs. Reduce unnecessary inputs of negativity. Stop consuming things that cause stress. Doom scrolling. Mm-hmm. Also, he says, this is interesting. Take note of your physicality. You aren't a tiny little child anymore. You're a grown adult who can protect yourself. Like, he coaches like grown men who are like bodybuilders. And he's like, for all practical purposes, look in the mirror. And just know, like, you're not that little boy. Like, you actually can protect yourself if something bad happens or even some bad person comes around the corner. Do you know what I mean? Like, just that training, retraining your brain.
You are not alone part. Peter often says that. He's like, hey, can I
yeah.
can I be on your team with you?
Can I play?
Can I help?
That's and I'm like, so good.
No, must do myself.
So good. And he just ends, take more chances, move slowly out of your comfort zone. The world is not a completely hostile place and you have so much to give. So that's question one. Okay, so Amber kind of landed there. Question two, am I secure? So the big idea is security in your finances and relationships is the key to a life that feels good. Being properly resourced secures you in life, in both of those things. So snapshot. At their best, Q2s are generous and connected in relationships. They use their gifts to acquire resources, predict trouble, and create stable environments for people to thrive. I think this is my Caden. In the scramble, they fret about money. They also fret about having enough resources and relational capital. Their highest emotional need is security in both their finances and their relationships. Finances is having enough resources for present and future. And relationships, they're just most safe and happy in a tribe or in a pack. While Q1s feel their emotional need for safety as life or death situation, Q2s simply want to avoid the pain of not having enough in either finances or relationships, and they're strategic at getting that need met. So they're similar, safety and security, but safety is like life or death. I am not safe, I might die. Security is, I need to have enough in both of those. I need to be secure in both of those.
I was going to say, it kind of sounds like Kurt.
I think so too. I thought of Kurt in this. Yeah. I was thinking of all of our people.
Because he's just such a,
He's a planner.
Keeps tabs on everything.
That's one of the things. If you're constantly checking your bank accounts and constantly, that chances are that's your question.
Huh.
Core fear, not having enough money or relational resources to protect themselves or those they love. Mm-hmm. Okay. The imprint. This question is often imprinted by caretakers who had a scarcity mindset, financially struggled, which was us in all of Caden's childhood years. We always were pretty poor, or burden the child with the responsibility of helping make ends meet. Family of origin maybe lacked security and stability, I think, when we moved in with friends and sold our house in Hamden when Kev was really sick. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. A family who lived paycheck to paycheck. Memories of not being able to do things due to not having enough money. That's kind of been our whole life a little bit. Like, you know, whatever. So interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Primal gift. They make great providers and partners by building stable environments. At their best, they are aware of others' financial needs and prioritize relationships. They are often methodical, trustworthy, and grounded in practicality. They are gifted at saving, budgeting, and investing. They understand the power of money and the impact it can have on one's life. They also tend, this makes me think of both Kurt and Caden, they also tend to be good, solid friends, low drama, not overly needy. Mm-hmm. They strategically consider ways to cement a relationship, not torpedo it. Mm-hmm. Their kryptonite is financial instability. Primal truth statement, I am secure. Their primal avoidance is they will fixate on hoarding money and controlling people. Other ways to ask this question is, do I have enough or will I run out? And so their satellite questions will be like, if they look back to question one, so see maybe which one it is, Kurt, is a security two, looking back to question one, safety is the provider. That's what he calls that person. And to shore up their sense of security, this produces a positive archetype called the provider, one who feels called to store up resources and meet physical needs. Mm. Or this is what I wonder if you are. Is, but maybe I'm wrong because your question was different, is the partner. It's security number two that looks toward am I loved number three. Mm. To shore up their sense of security, this produces a positive archetype called the partner, one who feels called to connect with others to meet relational needs.
And you thought that's what
that was my question. I wondered if that was you.
Oh. I think it's interesting that we both married. I'm curious what you got.
Very secure.
Very secure.
Stable.
And Pete, like Kurt, I think is more on the financial. Peter's more of the safety. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think it's a coincidence that I married a Clydesdale. Like yeah. a literal mm-hmm. man that.
A bouncer.
A bouncer. Yeah. Like yeah. a human wall.
Right. Yeah.
That. And my sister also married a human wall. Mm-hmm. Even yeah. taller and.
Bigger.
Well, yeah. not as big wide, but as wide as, but 6'4", 6'5".
Yeah.
So hold on, Izzy's. Let me just.
And I grew up in poverty and married someone who is very, very mm-hmm. secure financially.
Right. Right. And so the security piece is both finances and relationships.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But also the, I mean, loved and wanted are similar too, right? But like just that you feel called to connect with others to meet relational needs. I've often watched you and I'm like, your capacity, you say your threshold is, I can run circles around you in threshold of like doing things. You run circles around me in capacity for all the people that you love or take for coffee or just take them shopping. Or I send 10 texts to just people just to tell them I love them or have them over for tea. Like mm-hmm. that. So that is something that is like you run circles around me in. Hmm. So.
Interesting. It's so fascinating.
It is so fascinating. It's, so and it's so much stuff to like compute in 30 minutes. You can't, but just to think about, right?
Well, I mean, my prayer for as far as it being the podcast is that some of this pricks everybody somewhere.
For yeah. sure. So that yeah.
it gets them thinking because I think a lot of times, especially in our culture, we don't think about why we are the way we are enough mm-hmm. and how we got here
yeah.
and how can we make this better.
Right.
Well, and I think often what we want to do is we want to make excuses instead of finding the reasons.
Right.
You know what That's I mean? A reason and an excuse, like what you're right. saying, like mm-hmm. it's like.
Or just stay stuck in the victim mentality.
Yes, yeah. exactly.
Right.
Just gotta live here. Right. You know?
I guess I think the other reason why I thought I looked at you as the partner is like how with your boys, like you always say, you know, I do want to live vicariously through my boys. I do love to spoil my boys. I do love to give them what I never had, mm-hmm. you know? And so like that's the financial piece. But also like you're so in tune with like, I will never miss a practice. I will never miss a game. Like even practice, like it's like over the top. Like, so that's why I'm like, I think that is – well, this is me sidearm sharing you, but security and love, mm-hmm. you know?
Yes, for sure.
Okay, coaching moment for the number twos. Look for ways to remind yourself that you have enough. Be confident in your ability to make money and survive. Your brain will want to remind you of worst case scenarios about what could happen if you don't have enough resources. Invite truth and helpful data to give a full perspective of your financial reality. Consider how you might use your primal gift to the benefit of others. Lean into generosity, which you do. Coach others on how to save and wisely steward money. In a world of instability, you have a superpower of being a calming and stable force in the lives of others. Take action and leverage the strength.
Kurt Anderson.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on. Q3. Yeah. Am I loved? The big idea. The need for love is universal, but for you, it is the oxygen for your life. Without it, you suffocate. Snapshot. At their best, Q3s are nurturing, kind, and empathetic. They use their gifts to help people feel seen, heard, and treasured. In the scramble, they abandon themselves through people-pleasing, overgiving, and codependent behaviors. They want to feel a loving connection emotionally and physically at any cost. They will often settle for being loved poorly than not at all.
Okay, I'm not that.
Compulsive need to secure love makes them vulnerable to flattery and those who show them attention.
Yeah, I would say that.
I think I have a sibling who falls yes. into that category.
But that's sure. interesting because that is not how I perceived love. Just mm-hmm. And so that makes sense.
Yep, perception.
That
yep.
That makes sense why I didn't – because I was for sure thought I was going to be a loved with a wing mm-hmm. question of wanted.
Yeah.
But if that – I'm actually the opposite of that because okay. I smell BS. I have a really high BS okay. meter. Yep. So like
that's true.
Flattery – people who like
you suspect it.
I'm like you don't really love me. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep,
I don't.
That's so good. Yeah. Right. So you're not at any cost.
So I would
you're
not. Like, I would not.
You're the opposite. Yeah. Like
I'm
you like, said.
Yeah. Yep. I'm the opposite of that. Like if I get formed like with flattery, I'm like, you're gross. I'm going to kick you in the shins.
So
like,
good. I love it. Okay. Highest emotional need for a Q3 is feeling known, seen, and emotionally connected to others. Their core fear is being dismissed, unheard, and unseen. The imprint, the upbringing of Q3s, am I loved, isn't necessarily one of intense trauma or extreme neglect. They didn't necessarily grow up in non-loving homes. As with all primal questions, it's about how childhood events were perceived and received. However, parents may have affirmed and validated behavior rather than the child's God-given identity. Love from caretakers may have been a transaction, a reward for performance, not a free gift. Q3s may have felt loved but not liked, tolerated but not enjoyed. Mm-hmm. Primal gift. Q3s are gifted at loving and caring for others' emotional and physical needs. They create an environment that enables others to feel seen, heard, and treasured, and thus are relationally strong and well-liked. They are masters of healthy relationships when living in their primal truth. Their kryptonite is indifference, especially affected when love is supplied or withdrawn. Their primal truth statement is, I am loved, and a healthy Q3 sets relational boundaries and honor their own needs. Their primal avoidance is, wounded Q3s withhold their hearts from others to avoid manipulation and abuse. Despite needing close connections, they keep people at a distance in order to protect their feelings.
That resonates with me. And the feeling of like wanting to feel connected, yeah, but being afraid. So yeah, that resonates, but yeah, that's interesting.
Other ways to ask this question: are you listening? Do you see me? Do you know me? So the satellite questions for this would be, like we said before, the partner, which is the love number three, looking back to number two, security, right? The partner, one who feels called to connect with others to meet relational needs, or this is where I wondered, the counselor, which is love, question three, looking toward number four, am I wanted, to shore up their need to feel loved. This produces a positive archetype called the counselor, someone whose natural empathy and relatability make them a source of wisdom, unbiased wisdom.
That resonates with me, yeah.
So, coaching moment. You are the superstar of relationships. No one does them better than you. Take this fact and maximize it to its fullest potential in your family, friendships, and work. Find your people and love them hard. In a world that can be cynical and cold, you shine bright. Be careful not to pour yourself out to the point of exhaustion. Codependency is a real trap for you. Avoid emotionally managing others and overgiving. Ask for your own needs to be met too. Be willing to set boundaries when you feel like you're being taken advantage of in a relationship. Receive love as you give love. Be aware of how seductive and enticing the feeling of love is for you. Don't settle for sloppy seconds. Don't simply take what you can get. Love yourself enough to value who you are and what a gift you are to others. Mm-hmm. Good?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So good.
Okay, moving on, Q4. Just pipe in whenever, guys.
Oh, we're piping.
Okay. Question four is, am I wanted?
I'm curious about this one because this is what the test said that I was.
Okay. Woo! Okay.
And it was neither on my periphery anywhere. Okay. Really.
So the big idea is living each day in the sweetness of your own belonging empowers you to make everyone feel included. Living each day in the sweetness of your own belonging empowers you to make everyone feel included. You surely make everyone feel included.
Rach, this is already screaming.
Snapshot. At their best, Q4s are welcoming, inclusionary, and accepting of others. They use their natural gifts to connect and include people. In their scramble, they lose themselves in the full-time project of avoiding the sting of rejection. Highest emotional need is inclusion, feeling accepted and pursued. Core fear, being excluded, replaced, or shunned.
I just don't know. I feel like even some of the other ones were more me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't test well.
I didn't test well either. I had to read the book twice to be like, I think this is who I am. And I'm still going to ask you guys. Do you think I'm genuinely saying this.
Like, I have done Myers-Briggs and all these other things and personality. And I never test well. I always feel like I don't think that's really me.
This one, the core fear and what you just went through with what the whole year-long process.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
the rejection of feeling like you're always the misfit.
Yeah.
So long to even try it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was huge, but maybe more huge than it would be for others.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
You're right.
Also, the reason I am in your life is because you saw my insecurity and I literally lived in your bedroom. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. like
Literally. Not normal girls. Do you know that?
A lot of, we actually had subsequent, I've forgotten over the years that we had not just even a couple.
Your whole marriage, you had people live with you.
And our whole marriage.
Yes.
But still, when I lived at home, my parents let two different other troubled girls come and stay, and they were always in my bedroom and sometimes even in my bed.
Yes.
And with me, because they were just like, you just fix the broken ones. Here comes another one.
Yeah. Yes.
And they were given, it's a funny, if I look back, I was like, our house was pretty dysfunctional, and yet it looked like a haven.
It was.
And it was.
In comparison, to what other people were going through. And they were allowed to just be.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no judgments. Mm-hmm. And we weren't, there was no, even, in, there was no questions.
Like,
we're just going to let them be.
Yep.
And they'll figure it out.
And
also, like, your art, like, you create beautiful things. You redo our houses for us. Like, you're the first person both me and Amy reached to like, to pick colors, or how should I lay this out, or does this look good? And yet you struggle with feeling like you're not a great artist, or you feel like, why am I not famous yet, or why is, you know what I mean, like, mm-hmm. that's your
struggle,
constant
purpose. I don't care about being famous. I mean, maybe I do somewhere.
Well,
but
that's purpose to successful. Me sounds successful. Like famous wanted is that feels more resonant, like that's the rub of like, you take all these people to lunch, you do all these different things, and yet, you know, you also don't feel good enough, or you're like, oh, I don't, you know, like, you, that's your,
I still have to do something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always, I still have to do something.
Yeah.
So maybe you're a wanted with a wing successful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Yes, don't know. Probably. Yes. I don't know.
I think that.
Diagnose me, people.
Okay. The imprint is, it could have been total abandonment, or maybe a young Q4 may have had parents who just were not, who were just emotionally distant or unwilling to engage. When a child isn't pursued, they wonder why they're not wanted. They assume they are not good enough to be included in their world. They grow up feeling like they're a bother. For Q4s, maybe the home seemed like a tribe where everyone was expected to contribute, and that contribution was measured as goodness. Or maybe they grew up feeling like a misfit, a bookworm in a family of athletes, the quiet one in a loud, expressive family.
The decorator in a athletic family.
They may have also felt pressure to prove their place because more attention was given to another sibling. So there's an imprint for you.
Okay. I feel
receiving.
Do you
maybe?
Feel? Do you feel seen? I feel seen for you. Like, I'm trying to dodge the camera.
Oh man. Okay.
Okay. Right.
I think you test well.
Oh, this is good.
Oh.
I think she tests just
you
fine.
You tested fine, sweetie. Primal gift. Q4s have a unique ability to make people feel included and part of something. They are strong in social settings, good with people, and have positive relational skills. They also possess an innate drive to include others, especially outsiders, and make them feel welcome. They are powerful connectors and team builders. They develop off the chart social skills that manifest in large or small settings. And I would say that's true. Even though you don't like large settings, you do just fine in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Q4, it's outside my comfort
kryptonite
zone.
Being rejected.
Yeah, I think it's
okay.
True.
And you say misfit all the time.
I am a misfit. I just made myself my own t-shirt. And I wore, you still have it on? I think I do.
Take a picture. Yes. Okay, let me take a picture of it.
I've worn this for 4 days ever since I made it. I have not taken it off. It actually stinks.
So good. Okay.
It's me.
Kryptonite being rejected. Brene Brown.
Woo!
True belonging doesn't require us to change who we are. It requires us to be who we are. And that's what I've said about you every time. She'll always say you're a misfit. And I'm like, yeah, I think it's kind of who you're supposed to be. I don't think you do fit into that mold.
That's why I made myself this shirt.
But that's what it is, right? You're not supposed to fit the mold. You don't fit the mold. And it's a beautiful thing if you can see it as that.
Well, I think when you said that to me and a couple other people, and you've said, you know, someone, it wasn't you. It wasn't, I don't even know who it was. Maybe it'd be Shannon. I'd love to give credit because it was like, that's just not your story. Because I kept saying like, I wish this and I wish that. And I've had a very hard year of wishing things and sort of playing a violin for myself. And there's been some triggering moments, and my kids are growing up and they're at the ages where I started to feel big feelings and all the things. So I don't know why it's happened, but this year has been a very painful one on multiple fronts. And
shall we list them?
No, please don't. Please don't. And someone said, that's not your story.
Mm. So good.
You have to live your story, which right. God oh, wrote. I feel which like God you... wrote.
Listen to this.
So
I feel like you've tested
just fine.
Beautifully.
Oh. Okay. True belonging doesn't require us to change who we are. It requires us to be who we are. Q4s desperately want to be wanted and included. Their greatest fear is to be left out or worst, cast out. They are deeply sensitive to both belonging and abandonment. A wounded Q4 feels like a, to quote Rachel Anderson, but it's not, it's Mike Foster, a chronic outsider and doesn't know why.
Wow!
They have a strong need for connection. To combat this feeling, they overcommit their time and overstate their abilities to ensure people want them around.
Oh my God. Word.
I think I might probably just have to like sit in that for a little
sit
bit.
Sit in that. Is that okay? So listen to this. Which I also think this may be my Jesse.
Oh, yeah.
And so the Snapchat pain is so deeply bigger than just a stupid app, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. He's so, totally
he feels left out.
Yes. Absolutely. He's and it's not out. Just feeling and he's left also out. The it biggest, is the kryptonite.
Yes. And he's also the biggest includer.
Like, and so, yes. And so this is my prayer over him. When I read this, I was like, oh, if he could see this.
Yes.
When a Q4 embraces their primal truth of I am wanted, they move from lone wolf to leader of the pack.
That's my Parker too, I think.
Rather than wondering if they fit in, they fire up their connection superpowers to create solid and healthy groups. That is my prayer over Jesse.
Same.
Okay. Primal avoidance, wounded Q4 self-isolate and wait for others to engage rather than initiate.
My gosh, yeah, that's you and it's Parker.
Other ways to ask this question, do I belong? Do I fit in? Do you want me for me? Okay, so the satellite questions, if you go wanted number four.
I didn't know
back,
that was so loaded.
Yeah.
It's loaded.
Right, it's loaded. So wanted Q4 can look back to loved Q3, right? And that's what he calls the counselor. Q4s can look back toward Q3, I am loved, to shore up their need to feel wanted. This produces a positive archetype called the counselor, someone whose natural empathy and relatability make them a source of unbiased wisdom, or, this is what I think Jesse is, the promoter, wanted Q4 looking toward Q5, am I successful, to shore up their need to feel wanted. This produces a positive archetype called the promoter, someone who is sought out by others to help them succeed.
Yep.
Wow.
Rachel, will you please come and do my house? Rachel, will you please come yep. and paint this picture? Rachel, will you please yep. come and organize this party? Rachel, will you please come and, right?
Yep.
Someone who is sought out by others to help them succeed.
For sure. That's for sure. For sure.
Coaching moment. Never forget you are a natural born leader. As a leader, you have the ability to influence those around you. My prayer for my son. How might you use this ability to improve the lives and communities that you're a part of? Don't get caught up in your scramble of wondering if you are wanted. Instead, you build communities, teams, and groups of belonging. Your vision for people, especially the overlooked, is a natural strength. Learn to reframe rejection in your mind. When you are rejected, they are only rejecting a certain part or a certain idea of you. It's not a full rejection of your entire being. This is an important distinction and a discipline you must strengthen. Wow. Avoid the temptation to become what others want you to be. Express yourself from an authentic place.
That's not a problem
place.
For me.
Be who you are and not what you think you should be. You don't need to be accepted by all.
Wow. I think we just need to end the podcast there. For
we
the
got
day.
Three more numbers.
Oh, no more numbers.
No more
numbers. That was interesting. I feel especially bonded to Jesse.
I know you do. Yeah.
Because I see him and I get him. And it's
so maybe another,
it's actually
another podcast.
Painful. It's painful. When he's in pain, it hurts. And I was like, I feel like there's this terrible link. And it's I think part of it is that he's young and he has opportunities. And when I was that age, I was so insecure and I was just trying to figure out what it was like to be alive. And I was like, I wish I was a healthier version of, like, I wish I could go back and be even a fraction of who I am now when I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And I look at people like Abby Kappa, who's like really successful and she's still in her 20s. And I was mm-hmm. like, I feel like that's a healthy, mm-hmm. there was a healthy human there who saw her capacity. And I was like, I still don't believe in my capacity. Yep. I still don't. And I'm 45 and I feel like I'm dying. Mm-hmm. And
you know, my therapist says about that, the reason that it this might feel harsh, but like when I talk about that with my children, when I'm like, I see that with Parker. Like, I'm like, oh, I wish I, you know, and, or when I see Emma being so brave or Izzy, you know, and I say, why couldn't I do that? Mm-hmm. Both of my therapists and dear friends have said to me, well, you didn't have their parents. Right? So like mm-hmm. my kids mm-hmm. have parents that are helping them be healthy, mm-hmm. whatever their numbers are. Like, mm-hmm. so you're seeing, you resonate so much with Jesse, but Jesse has this as a mother.
Right.
And
yeah. What does that mean?
Meaning, what does that's that why, mean?
Look, no, he's loved and no, he's no, comfortable and he's so that's why confident. He's so,
and yet
he still sees himself as a lone wolf. Here's the thing, though. It's like everyone can see it except you.
I said that to him
and
the other night.
That's the problem. It's yeah. my problem. Mm-hmm. It's his problem. It's everyone like that. It's like mm-hmm. you feel like a lone wolf and a friggin' misfit mm-hmm. from the minute you wake up until the minute you fall asleep. You don't feel like you fit in for the very exact reason that everyone thinks that you are a leader. Mm-hmm. Like, you do see it differently. You are yeah. willing. You are, like, mighty. You have so many opportunities. You could be literally anything because you're so charismatic mm-hmm. and charisma. And people are just drawn to you. And yet the internal narrative is mm-hmm. wrong. It's, like, it's yeah. glitching. Mm-hmm. It's the unhealthy, as far as our Enneagram goes, which I actually love and wish I had more time to study that. I was like, I fell hard, again, right into the four, I think. Mm-hmm. It was like this artistic.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't really fit the mold mm-hmm. anywhere.
Tends toward melancholy anyway.
Tends towards melancholy and is easily wounded deeply, mm-hmm. but will lash out
mm-hmm. yeah.
to defend itself.
And doesn't read things as love.
Right.
You know.
It's like, more of a threat.
Yeah,
it's a threat.
Yeah,
or it's a you're squashing my vibe, mm-hmm. and so now I'm really gonna rise up and revolt. Mm-hmm.
And some of it is reality. Like, it is yeah. it is hard and it is sad and it is in some ways no win. So the answer is really, for two more years, how are we gonna walk this out? That was the conversation we had today. How are we gonna walk this out where we feel strongly convicted that we're not gonna do this? And mm-hmm. so. And you do have friends who don't, but that's not what we're focused on. We're focused on, and I see it in real time, all the things he's missing out on, mm-hmm. you know. Down the road, I'm hoping in his 20s and 30s, he doesn't look back on his childhood and just wishes for all the things he sees, all the things he didn't get, and all the things that he wished and pined for. Mm-hmm. That's the goal, is that he becomes the leader of the pack, and he...
I don't think he even has a choice. Here's the thing. I was like, I think he
is. Well, that's what I mean, because he has parents that are going to push him up to become the leader of the pack. You know what I mean? Like,
and ultimately he is, answers to the yeah. Lord.
The other
right?
day, like, when he was feeling sick and he got hurt, I was like, I watched a whole team crumble mm-hmm. because he wasn't feeling well.
Oh,
and
yes.
You could and see we talked it. To him you afterwards. We're it. Like, why did you cry so hard? He's like, I was so worried that I let the whole team down. Mm-hmm. And I said,
they didn't know what to do without him. And that's the leader in him. Mm-hmm. Can't help it.
Yeah.
He can't help it. It's just who he is. Yeah.
Wow,
but it makes other things hard.
So
it makes
hard.
It makes the things that when you're too young or you're not ready yet right. or you don't have the resource. For me, I was like, I feel sometimes sad, less now because I'm just old and tired. But there was seasons of my life when I had little babies where I also felt so capable to be a designer,
yeah.
to be yep. a shop owner in Europe, to be like, yeah. you know, something big and grand and grandiose, and I wanted to have a whole town, like, you know. And
that's never even crossed my mind. I'd like a town, please.
well, the thing is,
it's like this paradoxical sure. thing that lives inside my heart every day, where mm-hmm. I love the sweet simplicity of my baby's sock on the floor, and I would take a picture of that, and then inside my spirit is this woman who wants to be and conquer the world and do mm-hmm. what all these other, I see other women doing, where it's like they rose up and became this famous designer, and I was mm-hmm. like, and I literally feel like I could do that, mm-hmm. but instead I'm like, burping my baby. And I'm like, and it's a paradoxical torment of its own to have the capability to do that.
For sure.
And to not execute it.
Yep.
And it makes me wonder, that's when I struggle with, am I living out my life? Am I living in my gift mix? What is my gift mix? Mm-hmm. And what is, what am I called to? And I was trying to work this out just even last night. I'm trying to do more reflecting. And what am I called to right now? And this podcast is one of the things where God put it first.
Yep.
Where it's like, is one of the things you are called to do right now.
Yep.
Is to stick with it. And I was like, after we're on our fourth season. I was like, I'm a little tired of editing podcasts. But I was like, I don't feel at any liberty to stop at all. And I was like, I just so many people find it such a comfort. Mm-hmm. And that keeps me going.
Yeah.
Honestly, is knowing like how many people love it still. And I don't know, but
it's good.
It is. It's so hard.
It's great. Yeah, it's hard.
This is all loaded. I think
it's all loaded. All, this is just a snapshot. They're all
connected.
Yep, for sure.
They're all connected. Yep, to know that you have just one. So yeah, I guess we better finish up the last three.
Okay,
I could stick on that for a really long time.
And maybe we'll do another one someday where we just like really unpack like for our kids or whatever.
Yeah.
Q5, am I successful? The big idea is success is not measured by what you have. It is experienced in humble confidence and the development of others. Snapshot. At their best, Q5s improve everything they interact with. Confident and focused, they lead themselves and others to positive outcomes. When in their scramble, they can lose sight of the big picture and can become workaholics to achieve outcomes they may not even really desire. They can prioritize projects over people. They often fight off imposter syndrome and hold themselves to very high standards. It is important to understand that success is not about achievement or winning, but the joy that comes with being satisfied with your life. I actually don't think I'm this one. I think I'm the next two. Mm-hmm. Highest emotional need, I see myself in this too. Being appreciated for their contributions. Q5s are highly competent individuals who are skilled at what they do. However, they can make the mistake of attaching their self-worth to their performance and achievements. That is me, but I think the other highest emotional needs are higher for me.
I agree.
Core fear, being seen as incompetent or underachieving. The imprint. There are two main pathways to be imprinted with the question, am I successful? One is having caretakers who focused on the importance of performance, or two, growing up in a family where failure was met with disapproval. This is confusing for a child. When messages of love and competition become entangled, you structure your life on achievements. Who you are is eclipsed by what you do.
This might be Peter.
Okay. Primal gift.
My sister Becca, for sure.
Q5s help everyone win. They are wired to overcome obstacles and find solutions. They are self-starters with an innate ability to solve problems and make things better around them. Their entrepreneurial spirit and can-do attitude drive them to engage in multiple initiatives and produce great work. They bring their best as a beautiful benefit to those who have the privilege to work with them. For a healthy Q5, success has a much more sacred and noble definition. Q5 kryptonite is failure. And I don't think that's my kryptonite because I fail a lot.
Just pick yourself up.
Everyone likes to win, but success is the lifeblood of the Q5. They are competitive and focused on winning.
That is Peter?
No, that isn't Peter.
Yeah.
That
primal truth statement, I am successful. When Q5s live from their primal truth, they produce success in all domains of life and still maintain a healthy relationship with their competitive tendencies. Success becomes a gift, not a goal. Primal avoidance. A Q5 avoids their primal question by looking for easy wins or projects where success is guaranteed. They withdraw from real challenges and settle for the appearance of success, like a nice car, a big house, lots of money. Other ways to ask this question, am I a winner? Do you notice my talents? Have I achieved enough? Am I accomplished? So satellite questions. The Q5 success can look back to the Q4, am I wanted? I get a sneeze, sorry. And they're called the promoter to shore up their need to feel successful. We just talked about that, right? It produces a positive archetype called the promoter, someone who is sought by others to help them succeed. Or the visionary, which is Q5 success looking forward to Q6. Am I good enough? This shores up their need to be successful. This produces a positive archetype called the visionary, someone with a keen ability to find the value in others and maximize their potential.
That might be Peter.
Yeah, right, because it's not, yeah.
Because he doesn't, same with you, he's
pieces of it,
but right? Maybe but not the strong, not the flaw.
Yeah,
like he doesn't.
So
he
maybe see what the kryptonite is for the next question. Yeah. That might be more Peter. So coaching moment: you lift everything up. Your presence benefits outcomes. This gift must be managed in a strategic way. Be careful not to see work as your identity. You are more than what you achieve or complete. Enjoy the process too. Give yourself permission to do things in an average way. It's not your preference, but not everything has to be a home run.
That's kind of you.
Kind of me. Some look of for the opportunities of tiny greatness. I think that of you. Tiny greatness. Tiny a greatness. Mom, right? Yeah. With very
tiny greatness.
Bring your skills to what the world would consider unimportant. With very little effort, you can make a monumental difference. He talks about like someone who is an insane athlete becoming a coach, a little league coach or whatever. Mm-hmm. Don't let imposter syndrome take roots. Okay, so that's the coaching more for that. Okay, Q6, am I good enough? I think I'm between 6 and 7, I think.
That's what I had you as.
So Q6 is, am I good enough? The big idea. Your wounded worth traps you in hustling for your value. Set yourself free from the inner critic by appreciating and accepting all that you are. Snapshot. At their best, so that Peter might be a wing of this too. Mm-hmm. At their best, Q6s add value to others and learn to embrace their own imperfections. When in their scramble, they get trapped in a cycle of overperforming, self-judgment, and defensiveness. They often struggle with intense shame, insecurity, and imposter syndrome. Highest emotional need is affirmation, having their unique humanity valued and recognized. Core fear is judgment, to be negatively thought of or criticized. The imprint. Many Q6s grew up in highly controlled homes. Perfectionism was everywhere, but approval was scarce. The family's energy was spent fixing what was wrong or bad. Many Q6s grew up in a framework of good child versus bad child. Love was perceived as conditional. I don't really think that's me, but...
That's Peterson.
Okay. Primal gift. Q6s are value-making machines. They have a sixth sense for spotting untapped resources and often advocate for people and ideas that others too quickly dismiss. They seek out pivotal roles and love to be relied on for their special abilities. They are both highly practical, maximizing what is, and gifted at seeing possibilities all around them. They are wired for high performance and success in all areas of life. Their kryptonite is criticism.
Yeah.
Would you say that's Peter?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I think that's my kryptonite more than failure. Q6s are fixated on being good. Their well-being is tied to opinion, so they must constantly hustle to get their primal question answered positively. They are always just one disapproval away from worthlessness. Perfectionism will become a Q6's favorite tool to avoid criticism. If it's perfect, it can't be judged. Q6s learn to project pretend confidence while wrestling with deep insecurity. Even though they thrive on affirmation, they may have trouble accepting compliments. Biggest bully is their own inner voice. Naturally, vulnerability is difficult. They are unlikely to share anything that makes them look weak. Primal truth statement, I am good enough. Primal avoidance, a wounded Q6 will see themselves as a victim. They withdraw into roles and activities where they will not be questioned or attacked. Some may sit down altogether and refuse to speak or engage. Others respond with narcissistic behavior, going to the extremes of arrogance or self-puffery. Other ways to ask this question is, do I matter? Do I have the right to exist? Or why is life always against me? So the satellite questions would be the motivator. Good enough Q6 looking back at Q5 successful. And the motivator is someone who is success oriented, calling people to a higher standard.
That would be Peter.
I think I am maybe the guide, which is good enough Q6 looking toward purpose Q7. Mm-hmm. This produces a positive archetype called the guide. Someone who recognizes value but places greater importance on spiritual awakening. I don't know if that's me actually, but the other one I might. Coaching moment. You guys can tell me. Stop dulling your glory. The self-hatred, insecurity, and doubt need to end today. There's no room for it in your life. It blocks your light and the love you have for others. Speak up even if you aren't sure you're right. Your opinions matter. Spend less time managing and perfecting and more time trying new stuff. You are a value creator. Give yourself permission to be bad at something at the beginning. Perfect is the enemy of good. Shame is your adversary disguised as a trusted friend. Shame walks us back to our failures again and again.
I mean, that speaks to me. That just that little section.
Speaks to you?
Yeah. I mean, because, yeah, it's like my narrative. It's kind of how, like, your narrative comes from the root.
Yes.
My narrative. I circled the last three for me. And then
most people who grew up in a Christian home will have number 7. he said.
I was like not even close to number seven.
So, but that is kind of like just because we're raised like legacy and for the kingdom. And so it's interesting.
Mine was like, are you going to eat?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just fascinating how you can even think something about yourself and then be like, nope, that's not right.
Well, because there's so many layers to
it. I do really, like, I'm totally reading this book and I'm going in, but I do really think it does match with...
It matches. With, no, it like, totally matches.
If you, what is the opposite of feeling unwanted, right? If that's your thing, it's being enough, being enough and having a purpose, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, the negative narrative that you speak is what you want. And so for me, I don't feel safe, right? That's my primal question for sure. Yeah. But it resonates in me in being wanted and loved. Like, like that's how I make an excuse or how I justify my lack of safety. Well, I'm not lovable. I'm not wanted. Because what I want most of all of anything is to be wanted and loved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you want to be wanted. Am I wanted? Am I important? So what would that look like? Being enough and successful and having a purpose. So no wonder those three kind of like
all kind of connect to each other. One left, guys. Sorry, grab a cup of coffee. This is a long one. Well, this whole podcast, I don't mean this one is the same length as the others, but okay. Q7, do I have a purpose? The big idea, unburden yourself of the problem of figuring out your purpose. You are already living in it and it really matters. Snapshot, at their best, Q7s are forward-thinking visionaries who make the world a better place. See, this part's not me. They create projects, companies, and ideas that impact society in a significant way. In their scramble, they are tortured by the need to pick up a predestined path and not waste time. They often become stuck dreamers. Highest emotional need, significance. I do think that that is big for me. Yeah, significance.
All that other stuff kind of resonated with me. I mean, you might not see it as...
I mean, I'm not going to create a company that...
Well, you could.
I'm not like really a visionary though. Like I'll jump onto your vision, but I don't create a vision in my brain. I guess
I feel
what
like
I'm saying.
The one that
you do.
I think you do too.
I think you're... I mean, even you your like family pick creating a word your real estate legacy and all the... I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. The Kryptonite is truly me. Highest emotional need is significance. That is huge for me. To be part of something bigger than themselves. Core fear is meaninglessness, a purposeless life that squanders their calling. They think often about legacy, calling, and saving the world. That is true. The imprint. In the author's experience, children who grew up in religious homes often carry this primal question. They often grew up in a home where impact was held up as ultimate value. Average was the enemy. Don't waste your life. Parents may have leaned into the theme, to whom much is given, much is expected.
Oh, yeah.
Primal gift. Q7s imagine the best version of the world. Their boundless vision creates projects and movements that make life better for everyone. I don't know about that. They rally people to missional causes. I do love that. And encourage others to dream big. They help people unlock their purpose and discover significance. I do love that. Everybody is a somebody to Q7. Sometimes their impact is obvious and visible.
That is you.
I like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes their impact is obvious and visible, but the biggest impact they make is not so easy to see. It's hidden in the hearts and lives of those they love, serve, and inspire just by being themselves. And I have said Mark Batterson's quote, he wants to be famous in his home, is like my ultimate end goal.
I think you're that.
Oh, I'll be famous in my home. We're just not sure for what. But with some of them, yes, she was. Q7 Kryptonite. This is me for sure. Pointless work.
Yep.
I do not like if it's don't waste my time. If it's meaningless or pointless, it makes me bonkers. Mm-hmm. Primal truth statement, I am living in my purpose. Primal avoidance, Q7s get caught up in finding the right path for their life. This search for the ideal mission gives them an excuse to never act. They live in perpetual angst. By seeking the perfect, they miss the good. Other ways to ask this question, am I changing the world? Am I impacting anyone? That's totally me. Do my efforts make a real difference? Am I doing enough to help the world? Does my life matter? And so the satellite question for – this is what I think I am is they call them the sage, which is purpose, Q7, looking back to Q6, am I good enough?
I think that.
So this produces a positive archetype called the save. Someone who lives transcendentally. That's not – what he's saying is you're able to see the matrix. You're able to see
– the big picture.
But you're at peace and don't need to control or change it. I think that might be me or the guide from the other one. But those two together. Coaching moment. Be careful not to see your purpose as a as a fixed act or something with a rigid destination. Learn to appreciate the journey and the impact of today. Trust your vision, let it guide you to your greatness, and don't let it become a burden. Your scramble will keep you chaotically chasing significance. Work on choosing things that matter to you. Live passionately and with purpose. Forge your legacy, but don't forget to enjoy the gift of today.
That is and for sure that, mostly you.
I think it's maybe mostly me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even the other day, Peter and I were in the car.
And I were?
Yeah, we were driving.
The other day?
The other day we were driving.
That happened.
In the car. And
then,
I rolled down my window. It was
no. And I was saying, speaking of you, that of all my friends that I know,
sorry,
you are the most intentional and thoughtful about things. And so, like this 7-y thing, this like sagey guidance, like this is so, like, for sure. And I said, even if we disagree on something, which is a lot, I totally respect you because I know you've put so much thought and energy and purpose into why you are doing something.
The why behind the what.
That even if I don't agree with it, I'm totally here for it, right? Like, I'm totally
let's watch her burn.
But no, but I did say, but like it will be for... No, it's a total respect. And yeah. I said the thing I think that's always going to be hard for Amy is if her children decide to do it differently, or if
they will,
right yeah. And how that lands on you, hopefully, right. As you grow in the Lord, that because you have put so much, it's not, you don't do anything on a whim. I have never, not at the, even when you're like, I'm going to run a marathon. Not true. You run every day. Like, you're thoughtful.
Well, I signed up on the whim.
Yeah.
And then I trained.
And then you trained. But, like, everything has a purpose, a mission, a statement,
a goal,
a word, a breath, a novel.
a challenge.
And so. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like, you're so purposeful.
I don't have to do any of those things because I'm so close to you that I feel exhausted just by the fact that you do them.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I live vicariously through you. So, I have a message. Yeah. She's super successful. I get to, like, wow, you're so cool. I'm like, I know.
She's really awesome.
But like,
now interview my children.
No, but that's what I mean. Like, I think that.
Yeah.
No, but I've watched enough moms. Like, I do not put that pressure on my children as far as even like the expectation that they will fall hard. I expect it will maybe happen because statistically they answer to the Lord for their walk. I answer to the Lord for my walk. But even more than that, I watched Kev's mom. I didn't watch Kev's mom, but Kevin's mom, like, heavy things happened in their life and she raised her boys the best she knew how. You know, to love the Lord. And one went this way and one went this way. And others of our favorite people who we've had on our podcast before, same thing, right?
Yeah.
And so, but that's the beauty of it, because then you can't take credit if they are rock stars on their walk with the Lord. And you can take some blame. But I mean, ultimately, we lay our kids on the altar and we raise them the best we can. And then they're going to have to do the same thing with their babies. And, you know, and
God's telling his story about each one of us,
right.
Which we... It's kind of like you have to fail in order to feel that good when you succeed. It wouldn't feel the same. Like, we have to lose. We have to fail. We have to learn. We have to be the prodigal in order to be the prodigal that comes back and experiences the grace.
So good.
And it's all just part of the story that God is writing for us. It's very painful as a parent to watch. Mm-hmm. And we wish that they could learn those big lessons without being the prodigal and running away. And, you know, it's like, it's painful and we lose sleep and we age over it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet God, his story, the glory coming out of that grace.
Yeah.
Is such a beautiful thing. It's just really painful. We're on like the front end of watching it happen. Going the other direction, maybe.
I think that's the thing. I think when your kids are little, you're so involved in the busyness of just surviving.
Like, well, or it can just be like, we're not doing that because I said so.
Right, all of that. No, but it's a different kind of busyness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you are raising teens and young adults, because you never stop parenting, your hands are tied to the situation. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I can't make Thomas do anything.
Totally. And you can set family rules and they can still do what they want.
Oh, yeah, they can. And they can be sneaky and they can do. Yep. And then, and so often when my justice meter goes up and I want to go, Peter's like, this is between them and the Lord.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
We, at some point, we have to release this, which, you know, is great for my controlling mentality.
Yeah. All right, let me wrap this up a little bit, and then we'll do one maybe on our kids later. But just, okay, so in closing, knowing your primal question doesn't change you. It changes your relationship with you. The facts of your life are still the facts. You either own your stuff or your stuff is going to own you.
Amen.
Understanding your primal question is liberating. Knowing the invisible forces that drive you is a life-altering insight. So the goal is for it to lead us to more self-compassion and self-awareness that reorients how you see the world and yourself. And the reality is, if nothing changes in your actions, nothing changes. You will know more, but you won't become more. Amen. So the goal is to lead yourself. So, and if you were to get the book, he has a chapter on marriage. He has a chapter on kids with your kids and even in the workplace, like knowing the questions and even learning the people that you love their questions so you can speak into it and answer their question. Like he says, no relationship will work if the answer to your primal question, if my question is, do I have a purpose? If you constantly stomp on it and tell me no by your attitudes and your actions, we will never work. Mm-hmm. You know, if your primal question is constantly answered as a no. So it's just interesting, right? And so in marriage, a lot of marriage problems, he talks about like learning what your question is and then learning how to answer their question with a yes. So, okay. Oh, yeah. So here we go.
Woo! That was so good.
That was a doozy.
That was a doozy.
Good one. Hello.